For March 29th, 2024, we talk about Alone in the Dark, Nexus 5X, Hell Card, and much more. Welcome to Level 494. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We are back after an unplanned week off because we couldn't get a quorum.
Life happened.
Yeah, life happened. And also, I think the ones of us who could maybe have been there didn't play anything new. it made sense to call it. We appreciate your patience and your grace in this matter. But it's good to be back.
So what you're saying is there is a limit to our narcissism.
Maybe.
No, that can't be right.
We're still recording and publishing the things that we say.
Oh, no. It's the other way around. We're like, oh, we don't have enough to say, so it's not even worth our time.
Oh, gosh. Ben, what's going on?
Since I've been away for 2 weeks, I'll say I went to Pi Bar, a local pie establishment, on Pi Day, which was fun. Fun in theory, terrible in practice because everyone else had the same idea. So a business where you can normally walk up, buy a slice of pie, and leave, you had to like actually wait in line. It was terrible.
Did they have a promotion? Like, oh, get your slice for $3.14.
Their promotion was, we are not going to spend as much time worrying about our whipped cream because we got to be shoveling pies out the window.
Gotcha. What kind of pie did you get?
I got a peanut butter and then my partner got a coconut. And so we shared that and it was good. I had not had the coconut before. The chocolate creme de la creme, some might say, was sold out.
Oh yeah, I imagine. Man, I'll fuck with the chocolate pie. My mom makes my grandma's recipe, but a killer chocolate chip pie that we have at holidays. Yeah, I'll fuck with the chocolate pie.
I failed at that whole endeavor because I went to a place to get pie and then got cheesecake.
Oh,
I mean, we're not gonna get into the semantics of this, but I'm just going to state declaratively: cheesecake counts as a pie.
So Moxie, did you just yell "Tau Day, motherfuckers" and then run out of the building? Or?
Nice. Well, at the very least, you got some kind of pie on pie. Mm-hmm. I did not. I was pieless. I did not observe. Mm. Yeah. Moxie, how about you? What's going on?
Man, not a whole heck of a lot. I'm in my mother's coming to visit at the end of the week, and then I'm... we're going to be going back home for the eclipse. In the whole, like, clean all of the things before family gets here.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is like so stressful.
I was going to say it's like the number one perk of like inviting people over is you're like, then you have a nice clean place afterwards.
Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that needs to be the plan is she needs to just like threaten to come visit at least once a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's cool. The Milwaukee Gaming Classic lines up. I'm going to be in Milwaukee during that, and that is not in the path. So womp womp.
Maybe Kia boys will come through again and steal your car before you can go, huh?
They stole my car and left that kind of like glasses that block most of your vision.
Yes. Yeah. So it's a bummer because it is passing right over. Like local businesses are doing, renting out their spots in their parking lot for it.
I wanted to say they're saying like they're expecting Mansfield will have an influx of something like 200,000 people or something.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, no, I wouldn't be surprised if the Reformatory was opening up. Definitely the Speedway probably is. All of the establishments.
Yeah. To give you an idea, sorry for listeners who are not from our hometown. The population is like 48,000. So
yeah, it's 48,000 soaking wet.
Five times the population. Yeah. I feel like I'm a little worried about that because I don't know. I'm I've been watching a lot of like 4X games, and I think like if the tourists outnumber you 5-1, can they just declare that the city is theirs now?
They just get a cultural victory.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They send their monks to the capital of the city, city hall, and they just go and then it's gone. Then you're done. Yeah. Huh. Well, sweet. Dennis, what's going on?
Not much. I've been watching lots of TV, watching lots of movies lately. So, been having fun with that. I watched Gran Turismo.
Oh boy!
Just today, actually.
How was that?
It was some dumb fun. Okay. It was definitely a video game.
Wait,
movie.
Like the racing game?
Yes. Yes.
Oh.
I guess much so. There's,
yeah,
there's
a... I was thinking the same thing you were, Ben.
Yeah. I was like, I mean, it's a pretty harrowing watch, but Gran Torino is not like a war crime or anything. Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they went from the true story of Nissan taking a sim racing team into real life racing, and placing at Le Mans. And so that's like the foundation that this is built on.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good time. There's definitely some cringy moments. Like when the driver gets in the zone, he like starts seeing UI elements, of the game, the racing line shows up.
Yeah.
So there's some like, all right, yeah, this is I'm watching an extended ad for Nissan and Gran Turismo.
He's beginning to believe. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, if you can make peace with that, it's a good time.
It's a really clever way to do an adaptation, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. Better than most.
the cool thing is that, since it's based on a true story, they actually like do in the credits the like, oh, where are they now thing, and show pictures of the actual racer,
mm-hmm.
And his dad and everything like that. And then they, you know, they have a little text saying, you know, oh, he's, you know, changed the racing world, competed this much, did this, did that. And the one that got me was the real racer served as his own stunt double in the movie.
Nice.
That's pretty fun.
So the actor playing him would step out and he would step in whenever cool stuff needed to happen behind the wheel.
So was this the 24 hours of Le Mans?
Yes. Yeah, it was nice. On that.
Wow.
Man. And then David Harbour, who's like the cop from Stranger Things, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I would say the high point is just watching him being a grumpy old man.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's kind of his MO, right?
It's very funny because I'm also this week going to talk about something that stars David Harbour.
No way.
Yeah. We'll talk about
welcome to David Harbour fan.
Yeah, it's the Harbour cast.
Welcome to Safe Harbour.
I'll talk about it when we get into it.
Okay.
Well, very cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
Only semi related, but if you want to see something just kind of funny sometime, look up the 24 Hours of Lemons. There's, inspired by the 24 Hours of Le Mans, this is also a 24-hour race, except you can spend something like at most $500 buying and fixing up your car.
Oh, that's great. That's amazing.
And, like, the things people don't realize is, like, even if you bought a car, or at least, I'm not a car guy, but what I've been told, even if you bought a car, straight off the lot, if you tried to drive it for like 24 hours, it would break down because cars aren't designed to drive for 24 hours continuously.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Also just the pun on the name, that's the kind of dumb I can get behind.
Definitely an event where the name came first.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, 100%.
But there's nothing wrong with that. Like sometimes you think of a name so stupid you have to do something with it.
We do that weekly.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes you create a podcast.
Yeah. I will say it was cool having played Forza Motorsport, which is based on real life racetracks,
mm-hmm.
seeing all these things like, Silverstone and Nürburgring and stuff like that. Yeah. And like, oh my God, like I know that track. And they do a lot of fun stuff with like drone shots zipping around the track and following the cars and everything. And to kind of like recognize a section of track was a cool feeling.
Oh yeah. I was into that back when I was into NASCAR. I'm like, dude, I know that left turn.
As opposed to all the other left turns.
Yep.
Oh gosh. The floor on how bad a Gran Turismo movie can be, like it even everything else aside, like it is still an underdog sports story, which like is a tried and true, like it's a tried and true formula for a reason, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, it's over a 2-hour movie.
Oh
so
God.
Beefy,
yeah. There we go. Following, nope. Yeah. They found my line. Following,
yeah. Well, so, you know, it follows this kid from, you know, racing in his bedroom all the way through, you know, placing at Le Mans. And, there's, you know, 3/4 of the way through, there is, I won't spoil it, but kind of an emotional gut punch thing that happens, event, that I was like, oh, wow, that's actually really affecting. That's,
it's PS5 that's dies. Heavy.
You shut your mouth. I will say someone dies. But it gets its 15 minutes, and they're like, all right, back to the racetrack.
Yep. Yeah.
It's like, well... Okay.
Yeah.
You know,
no, like
let the actors do their acting and then, you know, the rest of the time they're in helmets. So,
yeah.
I mean,
had to give them something, I guess.
Well, I mean, I do feel like, you know, we have to compare this to, you know, as opposed to all the other amazing video game adaptations. Yeah.
Well, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
and that's kind of what I mean when I say it is a clever way for them to do an adaptation. And also the shocking personal loss at the end of Act Two. In order to give the protagonist something to win for, also just boilerplate, like that just comes with the territory. It's Rudy's buddy dying in Rudy, right?
Mm-hmm. Wait, what?
Wait,
what?
So
I was gonna watch that tomorrow, man. No, I'm just kidding.
So at what point do they say like, oh, the rules don't say he can't drive with a PlayStation controller?
I was thinking this should be an Air Bud Gran Turismo movie.
Oh gosh.
Oh no. Airbag, bud.
Yeah. I don't have an awful lot going on. My past few weeks have been past couple of weeks rather have been spent getting ready to go to Milwaukee. And also Moxie, been doing my own kind of cleaning stuff. Doing some spring cleaning kind of deal.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm recording from a different room than I usually record from. I moved my I moved my podcasting setup into the same room as my gaming and streaming setup. So I've got two desks here. And, yeah.
So now the question's going to be, is Greta going to knock on the door of the original room or this room?
There's no such thing as a closed door in my house. They will not brook it. If a door is closed, they are immediately at it yelling, because I've cut off a part of their territory. And she'll find me wherever I am. So, yeah. So it's just a bunch of work for something that only matters for my personal quality of life and does not contribute to content. And therefore, I feel like I have bugs under my skin. So
is that a permanent change or are you temporarily moving it while you clean?
Bugs
are only temporary.
it's a permanent change. The bedroom that used to be the podcast room, I'm turning that into a music and exercise room. Gonna put my bench and my weights in there, and then the drum set, keyboard, guitars, and stuff. So yeah,
dope.
I expect to see videos of you ripping sweet riffs on the treadmill.
That would be a great way to die, I think. Yeah,
I mean, it would be a sweet way to die.
Yeah, so that's some banter, I think. We probably ought to get rolling talking about games. I think we're pretty backed up from not talking for 2 weeks. So let's do the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And we can get started with...
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. Ben, you said you were away the longest. And I'll just believe you on that. So,
hell yeah.
Yeah.
Get gaslit.
What you been getting into?
I actually do got some new stuff. I had a work event where we got to play new games with one another. So that was sweet. But I'll talk about a different one before that. I've been playing more Balatro. So let me shout that one out. That one's becoming Fastly my Slay the Spire replacement. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's pretty good. Pretty fun deck building. I don't know if it is as good as Slay the Spire still yet. I do enjoy getting like a broken deck. It does feel a little bit, I mean, actually, honestly, both games feel a little bit luck of the draw, where it's like, if you get the pieces together, you can do it. And if you don't, you don't. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do like the amount of achievements that they offer and the amount of unlockables that they offer. Basically, they give you maybe like 8 different decks. And if you win a game with each one of them, you unlock a new content of some kind, probably a new deck, which is like each deck kind of gives you a new rule. Like, for example, one is like, you start off with this perk. So it's very similar to Slay the Spire, I guess, where it's like, or it could be like just simple as like you start off with +1 hand that you can play per round or +1 discard, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So playing that's fun, and I'm starting to seep into going up the difficulty and to try higher level difficulties. I beat the second difficulty, and I've tried the third, but you really need something to come together in the third one because of how quickly the scores ramp up. Kind of have to get really lucky with that. Maybe there's skill that I'm just haven't acquired yet.
Is the third one gold stakes?
I think it might be green stakes. I'm not positive, though. I believe it's white and then red for the first two. But I could be wrong. It could be gold stakes. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the reason why I'm trying to do that is that's like the next set of unlockables is if you win with any type of deck at that difficulty, then you'll unlock new decks from there. But the only way to play at successfully higher difficulties is having beat the ones below it, kind of like the Ascension system in Slay the Spire. So anyway, really good time killer. I don't know if this is out for the Switch yet or not.
It is,
Then perfect. Yeah, I think this is like one of those games where I'll probably buy a copy for it for the Switch, just so I can take that on the go and have it be just a huge time killer if I'm ever on a train or a plane or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's all I got to say about that game. I'm going to move on, do some new stuff. The other two games I have, two PC strategy games. One is in early access, one is not, but it feels the opposite of what they are. So the first one I have to talk about is a game called Hexarchy. It's like Monarchy, but Hex instead of Mon.
Rule of Curses, yes.
Yeah. And this one's a very interesting game. It's basically like Civilization, except if it were a deck builder.
Okay.
Which is kind of an interesting concept. The idea is you have a deck, you draw a certain amount of cards per turn, and you choose which ones to play. The resources you have, similar to Civilization, is you have gold, you have hammer for like how much work your people can do, and you have like a food meter that you need to like fill for each of the cities that you have. Mm-hmm. And it like in appearance, it also looks very similar to Civ, where it's like hex grid system, you find cities, you have settlers that you can move to find other cities. They kind of take population away as you do. On the hexes, everything has different resources where it's like mountain gives more work. If you can build a mine on it, you can get more out of it. You know, there's water tiles, you can build harbors there. Same sort of format as Civilization. It's almost like one-to-one practically. Mm-hmm. Just the only difference is that you're playing it through a deck builder instead of like a real-time strategy. You can play as different factions, same way in Civ, that have different perks, maybe a few exclusive cards that you get in your deck, but largely the civilizations are kind of the same, which is where it starts to turn into some of the criticisms of the game, which is it feels somewhat samey, and it feels like you can kind of do the same strategy every time, and it doesn't quite feel like a balanced experience yet. And that's why it kind of feels like an early access game. Of note with the deck building, one of the features of it is it encourages you to burn a card every time, because if you burn a card from your hand, the first time you get it, you get a science resource and you get like, I think some hammers. But the science resource is how you unlock new technologies. There's a tech tree similar to Civilization, but the way it works is you play a technology for a certain number of science or a certain number of work, either one. Mm-hmm. It has has like a variable cost you can choose to pay whichever one you want. And then that'll unlock future technologies as well as future cards that get added into your deck automatically. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, like writing can unlock philosophy, which is another technology, but that it could also unlock something like a school or something like that, which is a card you can play on a city to increase like the education output.
Yeah.
It's an interesting concept for a game. It's further increased when by the fact that you can play co-op with other people. You can play against other people. There's like a pretty good multiplayer system underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
That said, it largely has a lot of the same problems that Civ itself has. And then it has its own set of problems with the card building itself. So like problems that it has along with Civ. The game is kind of a foregone conclusion in the last third if you play with a lot of people or if you play with a big map or something where it's like, okay, I've outpaced everyone. Now I have to one by one, like take everyone over. And now instead of doing meaningful choices on my turn, I'm doing this like unit management on my turn where it's like only one or two of them are doing significant things and the rest of the people are just being like walked around.
You end up with a risk problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it becomes kind of boring towards the end of the round. I think they try and mitigate this by you can set a timer on the round and they have like a victory point system underneath it. And mm-hmm. so once you hit a mark there, the game will end. And so I think they try and solve it like that. But the one co-op game that I played, that didn't really kick in. And so we kind of had this like long, boring end until we defeated all the AI. Anyway, I just want to shout out this game. It's a creative idea. I think it could go in a really cool direction. I don't think it's quite there yet. Like, I think it needs more time in the oven, but, mm-hmm. Anyway, but it's,
does it have Sean Bean reading, snarky, quotes?
It does not. And that is another point against it, I suppose.
I can't tell you how disappointed I am that it's called Hexarchy because the board is laid out in hexagons. Uh-huh. Because I was thinking this was deck builder Civ, but with like spooky witches and stuff.
Ooh,
oh, what's that like? Isn't there a new Age of Wonders or something? Yeah, that's
Age
like
of Wonders
that?
4 came out relatively recently. Yeah. Hmm.
All right, I'm going to move on from Hexarchy to the next game that I played, which is an early access game, but felt pretty polished, and that is Nexus 5X. You might not have heard of that before because it was very recently rebranded within a week ago. Before it was Stellaris 5X or Stellaris Nexus, I believe is what it was.
Like the Paradox game Stellaris?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Correct. So this is like an early access game from that company. And this is a very interesting idea for a game. It is basically like Twilight Imperium, but Stellaris. And
what's Twilight Imperium?
It's a board game that's notorious for taking 7 to 8 hours to play. And it is kind of like a nerd milestone in the board game world of like, if you've played this, that's like a notch in your belt.
So that's a short board game or?
That is a long board game.
Okay.
This is
sorry. I know nothing about like board games. Like my knowledge is basically like chutes and ladders. So.
Gotcha. For board games, that's very long. But however, if you're like used to the D&D environment, that's like nothing. So
no.
Yeah. So it depends on your frame of reference, I suppose. The other like good thing about this game is it's done in like 1 to 2 hours. So it is very quick pick up and play. You can play with up to like 8 or 10 people in multiplayer. So for people who don't know what Twilight Imperium is, or what Stellaris is, Twilight Imperium is a game where it's a science fiction game. It's a bunch of different alien races. The board is set up where, people's home planets are kind of shaped in a ring. And there is a juicy, giant galactic core planet in the center of the board called Mechatol Rex, I think, in Twilight Imperium. And that's
doctor prescribed that.
And it's kind of like the main thrust of the game is like, who's going to take that? And if they take it, how long are they going to be able to defend it from everybody else in the galaxy? Because everyone else is now your neighbor, and they are wanting to take that as well. Mm-hmm. So it's like the central tension point of the game. Nexus 5X, also known as Stellaris Nexus, is set up the same way, except that they use like kind of the Stellaris system where it's like, You know, you have these like solar systems. You can send ships to areas to make them like science planets to produce like research, or you can have them produce like resources. They've kind of, I'm not an expert on Stellaris, so I'm not 100% sure of all the changes they made between them. But it seems like they've streamlined it in terms of like having only like 4 to 5 resources that you're managing, maybe even fewer in this one. Mm-hmm. But again, the central kind of thrust of it is you kind of expand within your area in this ring and try and take over as much as you can in your area, kind of have a tenuous relationship with your neighbors, maybe try and be peaceful with them. Mm-hmm. You can make an alliance in this game and, you know, have a one front war if you want to do it that way. But it's not necessarily a game that incentivizes one person to like steamroll, you know, like the entire galaxy or something like that. They don't really want the game to play like that, because there is an entire mechanic of the game where it's like a diplomacy round where everyone meets up and they have like a galactic government, and then they choose what the victory points are going to be for the game and kind of work together in doing that. Mm-hmm. So interesting thing about this one, like, as I just said, like that meetup or whatever victory point condition you choose, that'll be awarded victory points every time there's like a meetup the rest of the game, which is like, I don't know, every like 5 to 10 rounds, something like that. Mm-hmm. You get lesser and lesser victory points the farther you are from that resolution. But each time you meet up, you'll pick a new resolution. So it could be some sort of achievement, like the most planets near the core, or like the most planets away from the core, or like, I don't know, the most science or the most of this resource or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's asymmetric where everybody's a different faction. So like some factions might have more influence in the government, whereas like some might be better at combat and fighting one another. So it's kind of this political intrigue versus like territory control type game. The game that I played, I took the middle. So I was like extremely excited about that, cause I am not an aggressive player. Mm-hmm. I ended up coming in 3rd out of 8th. So I was happy enough with that. I quickly lost my empire after I had that middle planet, but I kept the middle planet to the end. So shrug. Anyway, this game seems like it has a lot of potential as well. The fact that it's time capped, it's like the Hexarchy. It's basically, there's victory points that you get every so often, and the game will hard end when you hit a certain victory point limit. So in practice, the games take like 1 to 2 hours if people know what they're doing. Everybody's taking their turn at the same time. Huge improvement over any of these other games. So that way you don't kind of get in this bottleneck where people are waiting to take their turn while other people are doing things. And so with that, there's kind of a little bit of pressure where it's like you have 1 to 2 minutes to take your turn, which is enough time once you know the game. It can be a little daunting the first time you play it. And the factions are really interesting. Each faction has their own kind of rule and their own kind of individual economy. An example of this is there's like this space rat type badger type race, and they collect scrap. They're not good at building existing things, but they're really good at collecting scrap and then building things out of that. So they're kind of like scavengers and stuff. So they like to go to battles or where battles were, and they can collect scrap from that and then try and build things from that. So
that was going to be my main question about this, because it sounded like one of your problems with Hexarchy was the lack of functional differences between the different civilizations. Does this take and mirror, like, because different civilizations and Stellaris can be wildly different, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, big time.
Yeah. And this is the case as well. I think the main thing is you'll have a leader of whatever faction you have, and your leader can level up throughout the game. But there's a specific mechanic you have to engage with to level your leader up. And that mechanic is usually bespoke to what the race is. So I think I was like the bird race, the game that I played. Mm-hmm. And their function was like, they discard cards that are coming up, or like burn cards that are coming up, and to try and get other cards. And it's like every time you burned a card, then you would get experience out of that. And then that can lead to some powerful abilities once you're like fully leveled up as a leader. Yeah. So that's kind of like an interesting balance of like what to go for. So it was fun because of all the people, like no one had played it before, maybe except for one person. So everyone was kind of learning at the same time. The combat system kind of works like a rock, paper, scissors, where there's like 3 classes of ships and they all have advantage against one another. But you can travel as a fleet and have like 3 types of ships on a single hex. So you can kind of like mitigate your costs with that. But weirdly enough, one ship is like a ranged one, and that can shoot people from a hex away, whereas everything else needs to be next to it to engage with it. a very strange asymmetry to put in the game that we figured out like kind of later. But anyway, this seems like it could be potentially like a great game for like a game night with friends and stuff like that. So yeah, it seems promising, but it is kind of like Stellaris. It seems like there's a lot to learn with it, and I feel so far away from mastery. So anyway, seems promising. So I definitely enjoyed it. The one game that I played of it though.
The short round length sounds like such a huge asset.
Yes. Yeah. And people taking the turns at the same time is like a huge improvement. The game would not be functional if they didn't have that. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, do you know why they filed the serial numbers off on it?
Oh, like why they changed the name or?
Yeah. Why they didn't like outright say like, hey, this is that this is Stellaris.
Yeah. I think, our guess, because we talked about this when we were playing it, was that since they have so many expansions that are usually called Stellaris this, that it might have been confused, like Stellaris Nexus might have just sounded like another expansion for the main game. Mm-hmm. And so I our mean, guess was really that they might have been trying to like rebrand it so it's its own thing. Yeah. So that's the best guess that I could come up with. But yeah, like it's in early access, so it's like, you know, bugs are kind of forgivable. But like, yeah, half the assets were still labeled Stellaris Nexus versus Nexus 5X. So they literally like changed it like the day before we played it. So
yeah, I was going to ask what the 5X is, but they explain it like literally in the blurb on Steam. The 4Xs are explore, expand, exploit, exterminate. You know, from civilization and stuff like that. Stellaris is a 4X as well, but this one adds a 5X, Express.
I thought it was going to be exaggerate the number of X's that are in your game. But
what's that?
I mean, that would
be
great if they added like, you know, a social deduction element. You have to, you know, exaggerate your.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You won't believe, and that gets into stuff like Neptune's Pride, like those old like browser games where ships traveled in real time and stuff. Like, oh, you won't believe the forces that are headed your way. Surrender to me now.
Yeah. Yep.
I gotta be honest, Nexus 5X sounds really sweet.
Yeah, it. If you like that kind of game, this is definitely like scratch that itch. If you want to play like Twilight Imperium but can't find people to commit to that amount of time, this could be an alternative, especially because it has matchmaking, so you can just join with randos if you want. You know, who knows how brutal that could be, but you know.
If you want to play Twilight Imperium but you don't have a forklift to move the box from the closet to the table.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I don't have any more questions about it. I think you explained it really well. Cool. Wish listing. Yeah.
Nice. it could be a good Duck Stream game as well.
Oh yeah. Sweet. Did you have anything else?
That's all I got.
Okay. I'll go because I have something new. Came out here pretty recently. So this past weekend I streamed the new Alone in the Dark game.
Ooh.
That is the one that stars David Harbour.
I feel like if you're streaming it, are you really alone in the dark?
No. And also, it's not a particularly dark game either. So Alone in the Dark here, it is not a remake, but it is a kind of revisiting kind of the premise of the 1992 Alone in the Dark game. You, like in that game, can play as either Edward Carnby, who is a private eye, or Emily Hartwood, the person who has hired the private eye in order to help, in this game, find her uncle who went missing from this, like, mansion in Louisiana that is acting as kind of like a sanitarium / like recuperation home for the mentally unwell, you know? When I say David Harbour stars in this, he provides the performance and the face capture for Edward. And then Emily is Jodie Comer, who people assure me is an actress that people know. I chose to play she's a British actress. That's why I do not recognize any of these names. but that's where they spent most of the budget on this. The things that I'm going to say are not going to sound complimentary.
Because they aren't, or?
They're conditionally complimentary. There are two conditions. One being, I normally do not get into, like, talking about what game should be worth what money to whom. But this is, it was released at $50. That price tag smarts a little bit for what you get. And that leads to the second condition. You have to really be in for some, like, PS3 era classic survival horror shit. A PS3 level of jank.
So like fixed camera? Or?
No. So you play this. It is full 3D. You play this like it's like a third person perspective. The closest game that I can think of to like what this would be, it's like somewhere between Silent Hill Homecoming and Deadly Premonition. In the way that it plays.
I cannot combine those two in my head.
it's for real heads only, I think is what it is. You know, somebody who, you know, has fondness for like an era where survival horror games did not necessarily have to be super scary, but instead acted like very strange adventure games, you know, capital A adventure games where you were exploring a space and solving puzzles and etc., crossed with very ill-advised action gameplay, right? So this is a throwback to just like a particular expression of the genre that I really enjoyed from it, you know, when it was like current at the time, right? So yeah, that is the other condition. You have to have, I believe, some nostalgia. I do not know that they were aiming to be such a faithful recreation of the jank of the time. I think that maybe they were trying to make it a little bit of a throwback. But regardless, they ended up making something that kind of fell into that. So
if a throwback shooter is like a boomer shooter, would this be throwback survival horror, like, I don't know, a boomer spooker?
Not quite a boomer spooker. I appreciate that. I think boomer spooker is an inherently funny phrase. So to draw an analogy, right, a boomer shooter today is throwing back to, let's say, between Doom and Quake right now.
Okay.
Like, you know, if somebody says boomer shooter, they're roughly thinking of that. This would be like the equivalent of a boomer shooter that is throwing back to like games that came out like around the time of like BioShock, not specifically BioShock, but like it would be a boomer shooter that threw back to the time of like Haze for PS3 or Time Shift or Singularity or something like that.
I mean, so it would be a boomer shooter that was bad?
Not specifically, not necessarily, but throwing back to a different, you know, to a roughly different era. The survival horror equivalent of a boomer shooter is something that's been happening very, you know, for a while now, which is we are making this intentionally to ape the feeling and look of a PS1 game, right?
Okay, so that would be like, was it Signalis or whatever?
Yeah, that would be like Signalis. That would be, Tormented Souls. That would be, any number of games that I have streamed that I'm having trouble thinking of because I've done so many of them. You don't see an awful lot throwing back to the PS3 era. Again, I do not know that they were doing this specifically, but that is what they landed on. And if that's the music they're playing, I'm going to dance. So kind of the setup of this, the game is a little bit disappointingly to me, kind of bifurcated. You are exploring this mansion and talking to some of the other patients there, trying to figure out, you know, where this guy went. And you have also found a talisman that when the conditions are right and when you find the combination that you need to like put into the dials or whatever will take you into like a realm, will take you into the memories of the person who went missing, kind of like rolling into his own experiences with the occult and some of the Lovecraftian forces that are in play in the region. So I say this is disappointing because I was very excited in the lead up to this, to the idea of an Alone in the Dark reboot that was very faithful to the original, where even before Resident Evil 1, Alone in the Dark kind of had this mansion that was a puzzle box space, right? Where, you know, you had enemies in rooms, there was a lot of backtracking, and there was a lot of like finding an item and figuring out where to use it to unlock more of the space to eventually get beneath it and deal with the, you know, Eldritch being beneath it. By making it so that nothing dangerous happens when you're in the house, and shunting everything off to when you are in these memory realms, it does take a lot of the fright away from this. You know, notwithstanding the fact that also there's really no attempt to scare you when you're in the realms, and it doesn't even have a lot of gore to fall back on. Has some pretty fun enemy designs, but also whatever. That's just kind of like the basic stakes, right? Hmm. The combat is very clunky. Aiming is, you know, fine, it's serviceable, it's not quite as bad as the the 2009 Alone in the Dark game, which was fucking awful. That is fine. You have a very goofy melee attack and dodge. Like, the combat feels kind of on the level of the Sinking City a little bit.
What was that game again?
The Sinking City, that was the game made by the people who make the Sherlock Holmes games. It was like an open world. Yeah. You're a guy who had gone to the city that was flooded that also has, you know, just creatures and people from Lovecraft. It's kind of on that level, which is not necessarily a compliment. More so than the intricacy problems, something that it runs into is just enemy AI. They don't really do anything. That like the enemies don't act very different. They just kind of gang up on you, and you can get cornered really easily, and you know the enemies can just Knight of the Roxbury you until you're dead. Yeah, so a little bit of a bummer as far as that goes. I don't know how long it's ultimately going to be. I'm not really even factoring in like the length or the value of it, you know, into like, hey, this might not be, you know, if you're looking for a modern experience, maybe don't pay a modern price for this because you're not going to get a modern experience. Yeah. Trying to think of like outright nice things to say about it that are not just this harkens back to something that I have a lot of affection for. So I will throw it to y'all for questions.
I mean, I bet David Harbour is pretty charming in it.
He's fine. The mocap and the facial mocap on him is good. A lot of his lines come across really mumbly. I don't want to say phoned in. For some of them, he seems awake and alive. But for some of them, it is real understated. Let's say
there's a back of the box quote for you.
Sometimes it feels
some
alive.
Some of them, he seems
Yeah. So
sometime he hikes his way out of Uncanny Valley.
So to answer that question, conditional. Maybe Emily, her campaign would be different. I also don't know how different her campaign ends up being. You know, if you go to different places, you know, stuff like that, it remains unclear.
I have to say, I looked her up, and the only thing she's been in that I recognize was Free Guy, which is definitely a ringing endorsement.
Yeah, okay, she was in Free Guy, wasn't she? Who was she in Free Guy? Free Guy.
Apparently she was Molotov Girl.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. She was the romantic interest, I believe.
Oh, was she?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not necessarily great. Oh, she was a cameo in Rise of Skywalker. Also a ringing endorsement.
Also not great.
Yeah.
Right, row.
Uh-oh. Yeah. But when I stream, people were like, oh, it's her. and just I don't know any I don't know any actors really.
Yeah, so. I'm just being snarky. Like I literally haven't seen like any movie she's been in.
Right. Yeah, so that's Alone in the Dark. I'm going to continue streaming it because, again, it's to a certain degree, it's like wrapping up in a familiar blanket, but like it's not something I would recommend mm-hmm. anybody, unless they were exactly me, in which case I'm sorry.
You have to be as damaged as I am to enjoy this.
Oh gosh. The only other thing that I've been playing has been more Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which continues mm-hmm. to be good.
Mm-hmm.
I have gotten through, I think the last time we talked, I was in the cliff place outside of Junon. I had done, all of the Costa del Sol stuff and worked through the desert biome. And now I believe I'm in the last one, which is kind of the jungle, biome kind of place before things end up going kind of on the rails for, kind of the last act is my understanding. I
feel like a Buster Sword would not be a good weapon for a jungle.
No, but the Buster Sword doesn't act like any, it doesn't act like any physical object ever. So, so yeah.
Why start now?
Something I will say, which, I don't know what I expected. A highlight of the original Final Fantasy VII was getting to this place called the Golden Saucer. If I say what the Golden Saucer is, do people know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know it's where you go to play mini games in Final Fantasy Online.
Okay. Yes. Golden Saucer is like an in-game amusement park. You know, you head there and, you know, kind of the point that it's making is Shinra has built this, you know, Disneyland over top of a place like a population that they dispossessed, you know, and kicked them all out. So you know, it's drawing that contrast and you kind of get to see it. But it was a real highlight of the original because it was a place where you could go and play these mini games. Problem is when you are like Final Fantasy Rebirth and your game is 40% mini games by volume, getting there, it's a little bit less of a refreshing change of pace. for anybody wondering, also in the original Final Fantasy VII, that is where the relationship system pays off. There's somebody who comes to your room and asks Cloud out, like, hey, you know, do you want to go on this Ferris wheel? Do you want to go around on a date? And depending on who you have the most relationship points with, it affects who comes and gets you. So for anybody curious, Tifa came for me. Although Tifa and Cloud is not my pairing, I guess it's fine. So
see, I think I'd go with, not in a creepy way, Yuffie and Red 13 just like going out and causing mayhem,
just hanging out. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, just yeah. just causing trouble, doing a heist.
Yeah. So other than that, I don't have a lot new to say. Continues to be really good, continues to be very inventive with the combat. I just check in order to give people, you know, just a sense. I have been playing stuff. It's just been things that I've already given the basics on. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So that's me. That's the two that I've got. Alone in the Dark and Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, two remakes. So there we go.
Nostalgia is, as I said before, a hell of a drug.
It is. Yes. Between Dennis and Moxie, who has something new?
I have something new, although it was not good.
Okay.
I have something new and jury's out.
Okay, let's do the not good and then end on the question.
Okay. So, not good, well, not awful, but not good, is Evil West.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this is basically a beat 'em up set in a Weird West setting. So you are a member of a anti-vampire, or I guess a vampire hunting organization that is, you know, tracking down vampires across the Wild West.
Okay.
And you've got a big old gauntlet that you use to punch vampires and, like, you know, juggle them in the air and stuff. Then you have, at least at this point, I've got a six shooter and a lever action rifle. The six shooter is The lever action rifle actually works like a third person shooter.
Okay.
You know, with iron sight, or well, with aim down sights and stuff. Whereas the six shooter works more like Ebony and Ivory from Devil May Cry.
I'm getting huge Devil May Cry vibes off of this.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's got a pretty good presentation, and you know, I think a pretty cool premise. And I was actually surprised. The character is very much like a Gears of War ass. Like, I'm a you know, tough guy that's also a little bit of a rebel, type of thing. And I was expecting that to be, I don't know, just kind of cringe and boring, but it's actually, I think, fairly, you know, fairly likable, fairly well written. You know, just the banter with your, you know, teammate is just, you know, it's pretty decent. I love your teammate is, your teacher who, you know, was brought out of retirement for one more job, which again, very stereotypical, but I do like there's some jokes, you know, he's complaining about, you know, you know, being a rebel, that sort of thing, and, you know, getting in trouble, and you're just like, what are they gonna do, fire you? So, you know, it's pretty entertaining. Where it falls down, I think, is just that the levels are very linear. So, at least to me, it feels very much like an old school, like, linear set point or set piece action game. And so the thing I'd say for this is it seems like a very good instance of that. Like, I think if you're some, you know, looking for something where you just want to kind of, you know, go through an interesting, entertaining, you know, action story, and, you know, you don't care about there being, you know, branching paths or, you know, exploration or any of that sort of thing. From what I've seen, you know, I think this would be a good fit. I do have to say I've only gotten to like the second level and then I'm just like, yeah, this isn't for me. So maybe it opens up a lot, you know, later on. But yeah, so I would say my take on this is I think it's a very good example of what it is. I just don't think what it is quite what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
I was curious about the Weird West aspect of this. So it's like your character has a glove. There's vampire zombies you're fighting, kind of. What else? Like, how else does the Weird West genre seep in?
You know, I know, like I said, I've only played the first two levels. It starts out with you, basically doing a train heist. So, like, you know, blowing up a bridge to crash a train that is filled with, like, bottles of blood for, like, to supply the vampires. So, you know, in terms of, you know, setting that sort of thing, it seems like that.
Yeah.
One thing I need to look up is at least one of the monsters I've fought. Like, it referenced, like, oh, it's a giant from the such and such tribe. Okay. And I need to look it up because, like, if this actually is, like, hey, we just took, like, a ton of monsters from different, like, Southwest, you know, native traditions. I actually think that could be kind of cool to, you know, do that rather than the, you know, just like, you know, everyone else is, you know, we've got your werewolves and your vampires.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It could have just been something that was completely made up.
For anybody who is unclear, Evil West is not the same as Weird West, the top-down action RPG, and it's not the same as Blood West, the the first-person immersive sim
horror Western game. It's not the same as Northwest, the daughter or son, I forget.
Yeah, the kid, and it's not the same as North, the horrible Elijah Wood movie.
And on the humor scale, it's probably East of West of Loathing.
Is East bad?
I don't know.
East worse?
I mean, West
it
Loathing
is north
was great.
Of Eastbound and Down, though.
Mm. Also different than West of Dead, which is the incredibly stylish roguelike weird Western that people should check out.
What I'm saying is maybe just possibly. Oh, well, West of Dead stars Ron Perlman. Fun.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Not David Harbour. Don't care.
We're on David Harbour this week. Ron Perlman is next week. Well, I'm sorry it was a bummer. I'm sorry it didn't kind of live up. It is interesting to see. So this is the Shadow Warrior team, the modern Shadow
really?
Warrior. Yeah. This is those folks doing a Devil May Cry alike. It's neat to see a Devil May Cry alike come out of a studio that size. And mm-hmm, it, you know, mm-hmm. and the visuals don't look bad. It's just
the visuals are quite good.
Yeah.
Huh. This I was talking with Dennis in the green room. This is very much me trying to distract myself so that I don't spend $70 on Dragon's Dogma 2.
Yeah. Yeah. I have told myself I'm going to finish FF7 Rebirth before I try Dragon's Dogma 2.
Yeah, I told myself I wasn't going to play it. However, I have also downloaded the character creator and created a character.
Oh yeah, no, it's it's free. That doesn't count.
Yeah. Actually, I feel like, you know, I'm going to count that as a story or as a game I've been playing. Like, the character creator for that. Very good. I think the amazing thing that I definitely am going to say now, like all games must now do their character creator this way, is the way it does your character's face.
Mm-hmm.
You select your gender and you're presented with 48 different faces. So, just all sorts of, different ethnicities, hairstyles, ages, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You select one of those and then it, displays 9 additional, faces that are similar to the one you, selected. Mm-hmm. So for example, I selected a white person's face. Mm-hmm. And so then, some of those 9 were like, more of like the pale with freckles, some with kind of olive complexion, some more of kind of a mid-tone, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then finally you select one of those and it basically shows you all faces that recognizably that face you just selected, but like this one has a hook nose, whereas this one has a button nose and, this one has scars. And so it's very effective in terms of, not just being like, if you're not the master of the arcane sliders, you can still get a unique face.
Yeah. So you're like actively making, making decisions almost like a, like you're at the optometrist. Okay. A or
exactly.
B. Okay. Like B. Exactly. Here's more like B. Now, do you want C or D? Well, I want like C. Okay. So here's the ones that are like B and C. Yeah. That is really smart because so many times in a character creator, I will like find a slider and then move it to max and I'll move it to minimum and rotate the character around while I'm doing it. And I have no fucking idea what it is I'm changing.
Nope. Yeah. The one I can't figure out really is they have like 41 different muscle variants.
Okay.
And heck if I can figure out like what any of the difference between any of them are.
Yeah.
But
I just like the idea of like, I traded out a 6-pack for a 4-pack, so I had more points to put into having a double bicep.
Well, it's funny you say that, because one of the weird features of this is, unlike pretty much every game I've ever played, your character's build actually has effects on gameplay.
Mm. Ooh.
So, you know, taller characters walk more quickly and have more stamina. Well, no, taller characters walk more quickly, but, are easier to hit when you're trying to dodge.
Mm-hmm.
They also get, they're more likely to get the how's the weather up there random encounter.
Yes.
Exactly. Very small characters can dodge between certain monsters' legs that other ones can't.
Hmm.
Also, your height and build affects your weight. And the higher your weight, the more carrying capacity you get, and the more stamina, but the lower, slower your stamina regenerates.
Hmm.
If it's at least like the first one, also, the taller you are, the longer, deeper you can wade into water before it, puts your lantern out.
Okay.
Oh, that's funny.
Huh.
Yeah. So there is actually a little bit to where some of this stuff can affect things. Although, I've heard it's kind of minor, but it is kind of silly.
Yeah. It's also fun to see the characters that people create. Like, there's some like pretty bang on Lazelles. There's some Shadow Hearts. Saw somebody make Garfield, like recognize like Garfield. I'm looking at a Pikachu right now. Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah. Man, I am very curious about this game. I've got a little bit of FOMO going on, but yeah. That all you had, Evil West and the Dragon's Dogma 2 character creator?
I've been continuing playing on the on Pacific Drive, but we've been going for a while, so I don't know if I have anything that's really that big of a deal.
Yeah, we can check in when you're done. Yeah. Dennis.
Oh, someone I'm sorry, someone created Kojima. And use, there's a, one of the tattoos is just like a brushstroke circle. And so they use two of those and position them over his eyes to give him the glasses. The glasses.
Oh, that's fun. Man.
Oh, that's excellent.
Dennis, round us out.
Yes. Yeah. So first off, some sad news from my front. I have now dropped my Steam Deck enough that the L1 button has stopped working.
Oh no.
Yeah. The left trigger is less responsive, but still functions. And I did the whole, like, take the back off and check the buttons to make sure it's actually like the internal button that's not responding versus just the trigger, and bumper being misaligned or anything.
Mm.
To the Steam Deck's credit, I have dropped it a lot.
Okay.
It took a beating before it finally gave out on me, which is a testament to it. But it is also a testament to the stupid fucking carry case design.
Okay.
Where if you don't close the zippers and pick it up by the handles, it will flip open and dump out onto the floor.
Hmm.
It is not hard to put one handle on each side, so if you grab it, each side of the opening, I should say. So if you grab it, you're going to hold it closed. But no, they decided to get creative with it, and it suffered.
Huh.
That'll teach him to be creative.
Yeah. Sent me down the path of how many games can I play without the L sides of my bumpers and triggers?
Oh, that sounds maddening.
A little bit. Fortunately, some of the games that are directly in my wheelhouse work very well.
It's like racing games, Slave but Aspire. You can't go backwards.
Right.
I mean, why would you go backwards?
Yeah, you've got many more problems at that point.
Any of the runner games, if you want to abandon a puddle in front of you or something.
Slay the Spire is the big one. That basically what I've done is any game you can play with a mouse only.
Mm.
Still. works great, and I can use the Steam Deck's controller customization to just be like,
to
all
map
right,
around it.
Know,
yeah,
exactly. Right trackpad is the mouse. Here's the clicks. R1 is right click if I need it, and I'm good to go. Yeah. So that's kind of where I've been focusing. Played a lot of Slay the Spire, and actually went back to Darkest Dungeon.
Okay.
Which I realized, despite that being a game that is very much like the type of game I enjoy, I never have played a significant amount of it.
Oh.
I had two previous saves, when I went back into it, and neither of them was past week 12. I had a week 11 save and like a week 8 save.
Hmm.
So it's surprising to me, because like I said, that's right up my alley.
Yeah.
And I've been diving back into that. So
it's a punishing game by default. You don't even have to up the difficulty.
No. Exactly. You guys will be so proud of me. I started in Radiant mode, which is the easiest difficulty.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Just because I wanted to get my sea legs under me. I wanted to kind of remember how everything worked. I think I probably would have been very frustrated if I had jumped straight back into one of the old saves, particularly because the hallway events in Darkest Dungeon, I'm having to try so hard, by the way, not to say Dragon's Dogma.
Yeah, you got those double
Darkest
D's
Dungeon,
out there.
Dragon's Dogma, yeah man. Anyway, the hallway events are largely based on kind of memorization.
Oh, yeah, no, just wiki that shit.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, okay, well, this is an urn. If you use this thing, it's good, and literally anything else is bad. And the only way you can learn that is through trial and error or remembering it from a wiki.
So if you want to be a scrub, which I definitely do, like the thing that made the game just orders of magnitude easier for me is if you look on Reddit, someone created a spreadsheet of, for each zone, like, here's what supplies you should take with you.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, that's
so
nice.
It's, and it's like, you know, with, if it's this long, like, this is how much food you need, all that stuff.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember from previous playthroughs using that. I actually haven't gone and looked it up, just because since this time I'm playing on the Steam Deck instead of on a PC or a laptop, I don't quite have the ability to have that other window open, but I'm playing on the easier mode, so it also allows me to experiment a bit more with it. So
mm-hmm.
I've really appreciated this time around the way that the positioning can have different characters playing different roles. Mm-hmm. I think in my mind it's like, okay, these are frontline classes, your Crusader, I think it's the Abomination and other things like that. Like, they are designated frontliners. And yet I found myself this time around, like, I found a Bounty Hunter, which I would have put as like a back ranks class that actually has the set of skills that work really well up front in combination with some other people. So kind of still appreciating that team dynamic and that the game is really built around that.
Yeah.
Are you trying to...
My go-to was frontline bandit or whatever the thief character is.
Yeah. High women.
Yeah, yeah, high women.
Are you trying to preserve your roster or are you chewing through the level ones?
So my first run, actually also on Radiant, I basically immediately party wiped. Did not bring enough torches and did not... I was like, I'll be able to power through. It's fine. I was not able to power through.
It was not fine.
No, it was very much not fine. So it turns out when they give you that recommended amount to bring for food and torches, that is not padded. That is not padded at all. And if you get a bad spawn where your entrance point is kind of in the middle of the map instead of on one side, so you have to do some backtracking, things get hairy very quickly.
Mm.
Yeah, so learned my lesson good with kind of a wipe on an early run, and then started again and have done a good job keeping people alive this time around. My approach, though, has been basically I once someone hits level 4, I've completely shifted focus to using other lower level characters. And I've stayed exclusively on apprentice level missions. So have not gone up in difficulty. Although the way the world works is as you visit a location, that location's level goes up, and you get less and less options at the easy difficulty and more at the higher difficulties. Yeah. So the world is leveling up around you. But yeah, so my mentality is kind of want to have one of everything, and a mm-hmm. Pokemon that, and that's worked out well so far.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we've been playing Darkest Dungeon, and that is, you know, you can play completely with the mouse. I did have to go and I guess force it to run in an earlier version of Proton to have the mouse show up, because if you run it in the most current version, the like cursor stays hidden behind the application, and so while you can see when you're highlighting over something, it's a real like guessing hunting game.
That doesn't sound good at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Just Linux things, I guess. But, you know, a quick Google revealed the answer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a good mouse only game. And that and Slay the Spire have kept me satisfied on the Steam Deck. Jury is out on if I should spend the $125 to get my Steam Deck repaired. I know there are repair kits available specifically for triggers.
Mm-hmm.
What I don't know, it looks like it's all the external pieces. And so if that internal button isn't, you know, registering,
mm-hmm.
buying the iFixit kit is not going to help anything. So I think I've got to send it in, but I'm not sure. We'll see.
It's like, okay, do you spend the money to get this one, fixed, and mm-hmm. risk in 3 months Valve coming out and saying, hey, Steam Deck 2. You know, coming out this fall.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and then you've sunk it. I don't know. I would do it.
I like the meta of finding games that don't use the L button.
That would be one of the quickest ways possible to get me to stop playing games on a Steam Deck.
Yeah, well, so by far the most common use case for me is when I'm on a treadmill. A treadmill or elliptical, the ones at my gym have a little tray in front of them for iPads, but the Steam Deck fits on that nicely. And there I'm only using my right hand anyway. I've kind of got one hand on the handle, and one hand on the trackpad. And so, you know, I was already limiting myself to mouse only controls, just for that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got a lot of legs in terms of like, you know, it's only 15% of the time that I will miss having it, mm-hmm. but also like, you know, the entire reason I have this and not my Switch or a PlayStation Vita or whatever, is that I can play these more involved PC games,
yeah.
especially when I travel, you know, I'm going to miss it. So we'll see. I'm also like, I feel like there's a fix.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's something I could do. I just, you know, don't know enough yet, so I'll research it. I'll tinker. If anyone listening has suggestions or has fixed a broken bumper, you let me know. Hopefully I can avoid that $125.
Here's a question. Why are you dropping, I mean, as outside of the case, why are you dropping your Steam Deck so much?
I'm just good at it, man.
You were just born to drop this thing.
Knocking it off of armrests is a particular common occurrence. So I, you know, I'll leave it on the armrest when I get up, and then move the wrong way when I get back down. So the case, armrests. I have literally knocked it off that tray in the elliptical.
Oh, God.
Which, man, if you want to feel like a fool in a gym, just knock this bulky video game device off.
Yeah, and it's like the perfect shape to bounce around like a football, so you look even more like an asshole. Yeah.
You need to get like a Steam Deck OtterBox.
Right? Yes, yes.
This just reminds me, there's some like iPhone game that was like about how high can you toss your phone in the air and catch it.
That's good. I like that.
That's the kind of chaotic we need in the world.
Yes.
But I said I had a new game. Any other questions on Darkest Dungeon or Slay the Spire, and I can bop over to new stuff.
The new stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, new stuff is a game called excuse me, a game called Hell Card.
Hell Card.
Yes, and this also falls in the deck building roguelite that I can probably play with just a mouse category.
That's all, like, almost every game we talked about this episode.
Right? Yeah. I mean, you know, there's an indie renaissance that, like, this is just the kind of game that people want to make, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
It is, you know, you can make it and have really cool mechanical stuff going on with relatively low fidelity on the graphics side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like that lends itself to lots of people doing that. And that means that you get all these interesting twists on the genre. Everyone's got a cool idea of what to try. It really, really, it's burgeoning right now.
So Hellcard.
Hellcard specifically is a version of this where their big twist on it is that you are controlling multiple characters, or, you know, also I think they want you to be playing this multiplayer as well, so you can have up to three people playing this at once, each with their own character and deck. If you play single player, then you kind of get to control the other characters, and I'll talk more about that in a second. But the three of your characters go at the center of the screen, and then enemies spawn all around you in a swarm.
Okay.
And the cards and abilities are kind of all built around this kind of physical layout, where when an enemy decides to attack, who they attack of your characters depends where in that, you know, circle they are around you. Everyone has their own, it's not a quadrant because there's not four. What, a trident? No, that's not right. What would that be?
Just call it sectors.
Sector? Sure. No, this is going to bother me because there's like the hemisphere, which is if you have two. There's the quadrant if you got four. There needs to be something
octant?
For three.
Octant? Oh, for three?
Yeah, for three.
Trogdor.
Anyway, yeah.
Trogdor. It's a Trogdor.
Yes. So if it depends on what Trogdor the enemy is in, which character they attack. In addition, there's also a ring around you about halfway out of the screen where an enemy inside the ring is considered near, an enemy outside is considered far. And I haven't seen attacks that can only hit near or far yet. You know, certain classes will do more damage to people that are near, certain classes will do more damage to people that are far, etc. And so it is kind of this, like, the kind of core fantasy of it, or the vibe of it, is like fighting off this swarm that surrounded you.
Okay.
In a deck building roguelite kind of casing, which is interesting. I haven't seen that. All the deck builders that I've played, you know, you're fighting max like three enemies at once, whereas this one, there's like 20 on the screen. So that's really cool. There's a three different classes that I've played with so far. Kind of a warrior that specializes on near combat and then AoE damage. A ranger that focuses on far, go figure, and single target damage. And then the mage is this weird, I don't think I figured it out yet, it feels very much like a support class. So they do status effects to enemies. And then at least the one that I'm playing with right now acts as like a mana battery for everyone else.
Okay.
So it's like you know, their abilities primarily funnel mana and cards, et cetera, to other players, which is kind of cool because everyone's got a very distinct role to play. So, you know, in typical deck building roguelite kind of fare, you every combat at the end of it, you get some money, you can choose a new card, and then sometimes there's other options that pop up. All three players choose each round between two options for them that will dictate both the kinds of enemies that show up and the kinds of like rewards that happen in between rounds. So it's like, okay, I'm gonna choose this option, which has spiders during the round and allows me to remove cards in between rounds, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And then each player can take, you know, in between rounds, one option from each of the player's choices, if that makes sense. So everyone can kind of coordinate. And even though I haven't gotten to play it multiplayer, like it's really interesting to be like, okay, you know, talking this out with someone would be really interesting.
Yeah.
In the same way that like, and Ben, I'm sure you can relate to this, like watching someone play Slay the Spire and talking with them about the right move is really fun. This is a game where, you know, everyone can be an active participant, which I like. When you're playing it single player, so you start off just you, and then in between rounds, you get to choose a companion. And so you can choose the class, and within that, it has different archetype names within the class. So like a ranger could be a sharpshooter, or I forget what the other one was. It was like a trickster or something like that. And while you control their actions during the battle, they will kind of have an automatic upgrade path and choices in between battles. So the monsters and rewards that they're choosing are kind of automatic, and the cards they're adding or upgrading are automatic. And I think that's a really elegant way to have the feel of playing with someone else, while, you know, technically they're still under your control in the micro level. During the combat, like you see your hand of cards, and then it will show you two cards that the, you know, the algorithm or whatever thinks are most relevant for your other other two companions. And you can click in and look at their entire hand, but it's nice to have this little shorthand of like, okay, like if my partner was just giving me these two options, which would I choose? And so, you know, within a turn in a combat, only a certain number of the enemies are attacking. And you get a little icon like, are they moving? Are they attacking? Are they buffing, etc.? And so it's kind of like, okay, how do I shift my focus to stop the people attacking and kind of manage any other significant effects that that I'm seeing here to kind of move your way forward? You know, it'll feel familiar to anyone playing any of the other games that we've talked about. I've kind of hit my point in my first run where it's like, okay, I'm clearly falling behind the curve here. Like, you know, enemies are scaling up faster than my deck's power is. And, that means I think I'm just on the beginning of the learning curve. So you can definitely see the way that like synergies between the decks within your own deck and between you and your partners, make a big difference.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to explore that. I'll play out the rest of this run just to see how far I can go, but it kind of is scratching the itch of this type of game for me.
It's hard to think of another game that has done what it sounds like this does to mimic co-op when you have nobody else around, outside of just like, oh, the AI takes care of everything.
Yeah, and I don't know any other games in this genre that have as much of a multiplayer focus. And like I said, what I've seen of what they've done so far is really elegant. And you know, there are special effects that will hit around, like before any attacks can be played each turn, you need to play at least three skills, or like three non-attack cards. But those can be played out of anyone's hand. And so it's like, okay, who has useful buffing, debuffing, blocking, or, you know, other utility stuff to do before we start doing damage. An interesting thing for this specific run, my warrior, which is like my main character, is built around not using block. So they have a whole bunch of attacks that are more useful when they don't have block. And it's just like, hey, I'll jack my max health up real high. I'll tank, face tank stuff and power through. However, when I hit that combat where you had to play three skill cards beforehand, it got really difficult because a lot of my skill cards are generating block. So that was like an interesting problem to work around. Really fun to do single player. I can only imagine like it would work as well in multiplayer, because as far as I can tell, there's not like a limit on who can play cards when. You're all working and talking together at once, which avoids the trouble in a turn-based game of sitting and waiting for someone else to finish their turn, because you're kind of an active participant in all those conversations. and able to jump in with your cards whenever you see fit.
Yeah, yeah, but it makes it seem, like as you said, it makes it seem harder to get synergies going. Like if you're playing at the same time, you might not be able to like line things up in order.
Yes, and you know, I could see this being something that would be infuriating to play without some kind of voice chat.
Mm. Yeah.
So I would see this very much as something you want to play with like people that you know and people that you could chat with. To be like, oh, okay, don't knock that guy. Like, let's knock that guy back so he doesn't attack this round. But before we knock him back, let me attack him because I have an attack that like does more damage in the near circle or whatever.
Right.
That's the kind of strategizing you're doing. So this is me soft pitching Ben to get the game and play with me.
So my hesitancy about any of these types of games is like they need to be balanced really, really well. And like that's what Slay the Spire did. And so it's like if it's good, I'm down to play it. But it's like I basically need to wait and see for, you know, everyone to love it to be like, okay, I'll jump in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it came out in February. And feels like it's kind of flown under the radar. As I look at the store page, like the number of reviews on it is pretty low, even though they are very positive.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Yeah, don't know if you're going to see a bunch of think pieces about this, but I am enjoying it so far, and you know, it gives me another game in the genre to play. Like I said, with the mouse on Steam Deck. I've installed it on my Steam Deck, but I haven't played it on it yet.
I feel
go ahead.
I was going to say, as a brief aside, I feel like the only improvement that can be made on Slay the Spire is make it so you can upgrade your cards multiple times, or like there is like a series of upgrades you could do. I think that's the only thing lacking in that game. Otherwise it's like design airtight, perfect. And so that's the kind of game I'm looking for.
So interesting that you would bring that up. The upgrade system in this game is that when you go to upgrade a card, there are three different ways you could upgrade it.
Mm-hmm.
And then each card on that tree, on that level has three different ways you could upgrade that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I haven't seen how far that goes, but yeah, there's kind of branching paths for upgrading a card, and you're meant to upgrade a card multiple times throughout the process.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is kind of just a petty thing, but one thing that really annoys me is that when you launch this game, it takes you to like a pseudo launcher home screen for all of the developers' games.
Mm-hmm.
There are, it's like nine pedestals, each with the game logo over them. There's only three filled in so far. And then you have to select the game that you want to play from that. Yeah. And it's like, I haven't bought any of your other games. I'm not interested in any of these other games. Like, why do I have to have an extra screen and click before I can get into what I want to be doing?
Yeah, that's kind of so gross.
Yeah, don't, like, there's... Put a little pop-up on the home screen for the game I'm playing, fine. But don't make it an entire section I have to get through.
Don't route me through the advertisement.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Hmm.
Other than that, yeah, having a lot of fun with Hellcard, and hopefully, as I get more into the mechanics, that balance holds up, like you're describing, Ben.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To revisit something that we talked about at the beginning of this, the consensus seems to be that if you need to find a word to say one third of a plane.
Yes.
Like everybody seems to be like, just call it a sector because that's what it is. But the one that I've found that most people say it would probably be this is a tertiant.
Ooh.
Tertiant. Yes. I like that because, yeah, secondary, tertiary.
Yes.
Tertiant.
Yeah.
So yeah. That, right. I like that.
Just to bring a little bit of closure to that. Wasn't even really a debate, but I don't know. I had to look it
up. It is a, that is a pleasant word like that, mm-hmm. that rolls off the tongue. A tertiant.
Yes. Tertiant. Yeah. Hellcard, then.
Yes, indeed. And that's what I've been playing this week.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I wanted to hear about NPCs that should not have the N. What is an NPC that you desperately want to be able to play as? And what would a game with them as the PC look like?
Yeah. And I'll get started here with Case, who says, In Final Fantasy XIV, and the game's story, you are a member of the group the Scions of the Seventh Dawn. One of the members of that group is Alphanod, a young Elizan, basically an elf, who has been half assigned slash half volunteered to be the group's diplomat to the various friendly political entities and Eorzea. I'd be interested in playing something where you basically play as Alphanod, zipping all over Eorzea, Eorzea, handling various political fires that have come up over the course of the Warrior of Light's adventures. Bonus points if you set it after the Scions have sort of cleared their names after being framed for regicide at the start of Stormblood. I imagine it being something like a fantasy version of the 1988 game Hidden Agenda. We covered Hidden Agenda on Abject Suffering. It didn't belong there, but that is a really interesting little political sim where you are put in charge of a post-revolution Central American country and need to manage both domestic and foreign policy to try and keep yourself in power. I could see that actually ruling a fantasy version of that.
So it's like Serious Tropico.
Yes. Yeah. I think that that's a really good answer. Let's see, Ben, what does Peter say?
Peter says, when it comes to NPCs, the game that always got to me was the Kingdom Hearts franchise. It always struck me as a little odd that I could never play as the party members outside of the MC Sora. The party members included the likes of Donald, Goofy, Beast, Aladdin. The biggest one that I regularly wanted to play as was the character named Riku. He was a unique character created for the story and was generally the foil for Sora. There were a couple instances where Sora and Riku had to team up, and this was the character I wanted to play as the most in Kingdom Hearts 2. I know it's that's not the case now, based on the state of the franchise now, but back when I was younger, it was not regularly available. The weapon design he had, I just thought was really cool. Fair.
Yeah. I thought that Riku was playable. But then again, I've not paid that much attention to Kingdom Hearts and, in fact, have actively avoided information on the matter.
I mean, they've made like 20 games in this series. There's probably one where he's playable.
Yes. Moxie, what's Kyle say?
Kyle says, Zote the Mighty from Hollow Knight is definitely up there. He must have had some adventures to come up with his 57 precepts. A gem like Precept 11, Mothers Will Always Betray You, definitely has a story behind it. Gameplay could be another Metroidvania like Hollow Knight with silly complications. Then again, Zote is terrible at combat, constantly in bad situations, and Precept 18 is Seek Truth in the Darkness. So maybe survival horror is more appropriate. So I never got far enough to meet this person. Is this just like Hollow Knight's equivalent of the Onion Knight?
Kinda. He's a little bit more crotchety than Sigmire is. He's really good. He's like a crusty old warrior guy.
Nice.
I read it as the series Captain Quark.
I don't know who that is.
Think from Ratchet and Clank.
Like, oh, okay.
Very full of himself, thinks he's all that, but is actually pretty incompetent.
Yeah. That also fits, I think.
Washed up previous hero.
Yes. Yeah. That is a good idea, I think.
I love the horror game idea, Moxie, to what you were saying of, like, it's an action game setting, but you're not that good. So still hyper zippy and you know reflex based, but what you're handling just is not not up to par with everyone else.
Challenge mode. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dennis, round us out with what Jack says.
Yeah, Jack says, give me the constantly exhausted inner monologue of Kim Kitsurugi in Disco Elysium, the Square Man's Cut.
Yeah, this is a this only makes sense. Just playing the game with just a version of Harry that just acts randomly. like has picked one of the, you know, like it is rolled up like at the beginning, like what kind of cop he is going to air towards. And then you are just trying to keep things from spiraling out of control.
You have a single patience meter.
Yeah. I'll say mine. I think it would be fun if there was a mode in Elden Ring where you could play as Iron Fist Alexander, the Warrior Jar.
Hmm.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of similar to Zote and to Sigmire. But like, you know, the idea behind warrior jars is they are crafted and what's inside of them is the remains of warriors. And that's how they gain their strength. Right. That's how they gain their abilities. Mm-hmm. So I'm picturing almost like a variant of it that is almost Mega Man like, where everything you kill impacts your stats based on what you have, like what you've taken out.
Oh, you're like an infinite stew.
Yes. Yeah. to the point where after you beat Radahn, like he is just like greedily shoveling as much of his remains into the top of him as he can. You know?
Yeah.
I think that a version there. And of course you would also have to try and avoid short little holes and depressions so you wouldn't get stuck like he does two times in the game. You know, hoping that some tarnished will come along and butter you up and then push you out. Yeah.
I love this. So, you put the remains of the warrior, into the jar. You gain some of their abilities, but I imagine you also like gain some of their personalities or ambitions. Mm-hmm. Like your quest changes depending on who you've absorbed.
Yeah. And it would almost be like the dredge inventory system where the place where you have taken damage affects what is stored in that part of the body. So maybe it's mm-hmm. possible to like lose that aspect as it breaks and then you have to go and fix the vessel.
Hmm.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to make that pitch as in depth, but that sounds rad as hell.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. I love Kyle's idea of a horror game set in Hollow Knight world.
Bugs is good. Let's see, Ben. How about you? What's yours?
My answer feels significantly more two-dimensional. Mine is just, I want to play as Funky Kong in Donkey Kong Country.
What?
Okay. That feels like a very minimal answer in comparison. And I'm pretty sure you can play as him in later iterations, but I never played past Country 2, so mm-hmm. in my headcanon, you can't play as him. So
you can cart as him, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Funky Kong was my go-to character for a while in Mario Kart.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. Nope, that's a perfectly fine answer. You know, doesn't have to be a whole ass game pitch like I made it on accident. Yeah. Moxie, how about you?
So I feel like the obvious answer for me is let me play as a Palico in Monster Hunter.
Mm, okay.
Nice. Somewhat similarly, The Destiny has been getting more and more towards the idea that the various alien races could potentially be guardians.
Okay.
So I would really love to play as a fallen guardian.
Mm-hmm.
And also I would mainly love to see Bungie come up with a quadruple wielding system.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's I think that's what I'd go with.
Okay. Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I used it in the picture. I would want to play as the merchant from Resident Evil 4.
Would this be like Backpack Hero?
Yeah, I'm imagining this so that there's a board game called Bargain Quest. Have any of you heard of or played that?
No.
So you actually play as a shopkeeper that equips the heroes going out to fight the monsters. And it's this really fun balance of like you want to make the maximum profit for yourself as possible. But you also like if your heroes all die to the monster, they're going to come and trash your shop. the monster's going to overrun your village. So it's a balance between like making money off the heroes and making sure they survive long enough to, you know, come back as repeat customers, I guess. And so I'm imagining that, like, you know, selling your wares to equip the heroes of the Resident Evil universe, and then, you know, getting from place to place could be interesting as well, but balancing that, you know, wanting to keep them alive because you want to make more profit off of them versus just making profit off of them now.
Nice. Yeah.
I mean, we know what any true capitalist would do.
Yes.
So, like, you're focused more on the peddling part of this. Mm-hmm. In my head, it was almost like a Death Stranding kind of thing where, like, Leon would get to you and you would make your sales and what have you, and then you would have to pack up your entire shop and get to where he is going to be next ahead of him while also finding and getting the new inventory.
That would be amazing. Yes.
Yeah.
Hide the secret passages well enough that you're using so he doesn't get suspicious.
Yep. Yeah, because, like, there's not like 20 of that dude.
No.
I mean, not that you know.
It is less cool to me if there are 20 of that dude.
What if it's like a Hot Fuzz situation?
Oh yeah, it could be a Hot Fuzz situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What if somewhat similar, I think, would be kind of entertaining is a game that's just generic, like, medieval fantasy thing where you are the hero's horse that has to make sure to be constantly be within whistling range.
Yeah. Huh.
Oh, are there any video games where you play as a horse?
Oh yeah. I'm sure there's some,
exist, right?
Yeah. It's gotta be a thing. Yeah.
I mean, there's fighting herds.
Them's fighting herds.
Yeah.
Yes. No, that's the actual name of that game, is them's fighting herds. Good answers all. Thank you, Dennis, for posting that. If you would like to participate in the multiplayer, watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons in the Duckfeed community Facebook group.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. I'm going to have Ben, you get started with this story about Larian.
Yeah, sometime over the past 2 weeks, Larian came out and announced that the next game they were going to be working on was not going to be in the Baldur's Gate universe. It was not going to be a sequel, nothing like that. And they kind of cited it as, like, they want to grow and do something else. Internet being the internet and wanting to white knight for Larian immediately started trashing on Wizards of the Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, not a hard target. So yeah, that kind of makes sense. Larian came out and said, like, specified, like, hey, they were really good to work with. Like, this is not because they gave us a bad deal or anything like that. Like, we honestly are just want to work on something else. So,
well, yeah, I mean, Wizards of the Coast only gives their employees bad deals.
Yeah.
I mean, but the balls on Larian for this to walk away from, you know, they could ride the Baldur's Gate 3 expansion pack, 3 Karlac outfits for $20, you know, thing into the dirt and print money.
Yeah.
So thank God the MBAs are not in control of this company.
And this kind of comes on the back of the game director, the president of the studio or whatever, just talking about the game industry and, like, how not great it is that it's being led by, like, publishers and by business people as opposed to being led by the people who are making the games and, like, have an interest in making, like, the games fun.
It's king shit. I've got so much respect for that studio. Not just because of the product they made, but this seems like the right call. As much as I would like to see other stuff explored, kind of the other part of this was they were working on, like, expansion DLC stuff, but they're just like, hey, our heart isn't in it. Like, let's just make something the studio actually wants to make.
I mean, they already released a big epilogue section that, like, tied up all these loose ends.
Yeah.
Know when to leave on top, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, I also saw, kind of along with what Ben said, I also saw people who had previously worked with Wizards, specifically Josh Sawyer, the head of Obsidian, saying like, yeah, I understand why they wouldn't want to work with Hasbro. Obsidian, a company that has made games in the D&D universe, right? Yeah, makes absolute sense to me. Is what I would say. I posted about this, and Jala brought it to my attention too. Like, a lot of the people who were Larian's contacts at Wizards were fired as well. So
that's right.
Yeah. So it's fired or otherwise left the company. So it's just like, hey, if we don't have those relationships to rely on, what are we left with? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. King shit. Dennis, what's going on with The Last of Us Season 2?
Yeah, what is or is not going on, or, you know, is or is not still filming, is yet to be seen. but the rumors came out recently that Pedro Pascal, who plays Joel in the HBO The Last of Us adaptation, is already finished with his Season 2 filming. If you have played the game, you might have a good idea why that is the case.
It's the most obvious thing in the entire world, which made it funny when they're like, hey, Pedro Pascal's coming back. And I was like, okay, cool. So that'll be a weekend, maybe?
And then, you know, between when I linked this article to talk about at recording and when we actually recorded, another headline came up of HBO says, ha ha ha, it's shut up. He's not done filming with us yet. He's totally still going. Why would you say that?
Who are you fooling? Come on.
Yeah. so yeah, it seems to be a consensus that, like, you know, The Last of Us TV show is going to follow the plot of 2 fairly faithfully.
Mm-hmm.
And that has certain implications for Joel's future.
Mm-hmm.
I would be so curious to talk to someone who has only watched the show and not played the games.
Yeah.
At this point.
Here's what I would want them to do is shoot 2 seasons at the same time and break it up in a certain way.
Yeah, that's the other thing, right? Like that is the bigger how do you tell that story with the structure that you need to?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
See, I'd just like them to make, you know, something creative and interesting and original.
I mean, if they give us more stuff that's like the Bill episode, I'd be happy, but
yeah,
who knows?
They need to take the Lord of the Rings approach to, like, the your question, Cole, of how do they do that? Like, yeah, there's a lot of work to be done to keep 2 kind of completely separate threads interesting as they're intertwined.
Yeah.
But it can be done. But favorite tweet that I saw about this is, you guys need to chill about Pedro Pascal wrapping filming. Maybe he just wanted to go play some golf.
Woof. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Play The Last of Us 2. It's a good game.
So the...
You were the first person I've heard who said that.
Oh, Ben liked it too. Yeah. Yeah, I've got a quick one. This is just a follow-up on a previous story. So remember me talking about that new Rock Band guitar that was coming out from PDP?
Yeah.
That actually got a it's pre-orderable now, which is really cool. It is available at a bunch of different stores, including from PDP itself. I'm talking about the Riffmaster is the name of this. It is $130, which is, you know, roughly to be expected, given that it is a specialty item. You know, it's not being, like, straight up mass produced at economies of scale, right now. So makes a little sense that it'd be a little bit more costly. That, and they haven't put one of these out for, you know, forever. So inflation and all of that. But, like, all the cool stuff about this, it has its own battery inside of it. It is rechargeable. There's the Xbox and PS4 version of it, both of which I believe can be used on the PC as well, which I'm looking forward to for Clone Hero purposes. That's why I pre-ordered mine. And also it's ambidextrous, the first of these guitars to work like that. That's in addition to having an analog stick on the back of the headstock, which is okay. Pretty cool to me.
Yeah. Dumb question. I thought guitars were innately ambidextrous.
Guitars can be. Like, they're like, okay. A guitar itself cannot be, it can either be left-handed, left-hand strung or right-hand strung. There are situations where like Jimi Hendrix played a right-hand, like a right-hand strung guitar with his left hand. Okay. But regardless, these plastic guitars, a lot of the time they like the strap posts were hung in such a way that it was very awkward to play them with the with your right hand doing the fretting. This one, it is designed so it can hang naturally like that.
Okay,
so
that makes sense.
I'm excited about this. I've got mine pre-ordered. I don't know what the official release date is. On Amazon, they have it as April the 30th or something. But I'm not seeing anything on their website. It'll just come when it comes. But yeah, that's my story. Just more music game shit. I'm back in my element, baby.
Let's go. Time for a renaissance.
Yeah. Moxie, what's this game you linked?
Well, so I actually have two stories.
Okay.
The first one's pretty quick. It is just a game that in particular Dennis needs to play.
Ooh, do tell.
Yeah, Terra Invicta has been added to Game Pass, and it's basically a game game created by the people that made Long War for XCOM that in terms of premise, it's basically what if humanity had early warning of the alien invasion and decide to get serious about like spreading through the galaxy in preparation.
Okay.
And and gameplay wise, I've not played it, but from the previews, it appears to be XCOM oops all Geoscape. So what I can tell, there is no like on the ground tile based combat. It's all a combination of jockeying for political control of Earth and then like spreading through the stars.
That sounds rad.
Yeah, the other thing that looks interesting is apparently there's like six different factions that are like, one of them is the traditional XCOM, like they want to fight the aliens. One is like, hey, we need to convince humanity to just surrender. One worships the aliens as gods, like all sorts of things.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Man, that sounds really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, looks very sweet. The second game on things that are not cool, Social Minefield. So this is a browser-based game of Minefield where you have to, in order to play it, you have to log in to your Facebook account. The reason for that is that if you accidentally click on a mine, it will like a random Facebook link.
Oh, no. Oh, boy. Huh.
How random? Like, is this within your friends list or like could this potentially put you on a watch list?
And I mean, I this just says exclusive. Random Facebook link.
Yeah, that's playing for stakes. So to clarify, you said, it's a social version of Minefield. Minesweeper would be the game.
Yeah.
At least that's what the Windows one was called back in the
yes,
day.
Yes, yes, that's correct.
I want to read one line from the game where it says, you must be logged into Facebook and use a browser with privacy protections. Google Chrome works best. Blah, blah. Similarly, privacy extensions, ad blockers, or being European will break the game.
Being European. That's pretty good. Yeah.
My digital resistances.
God. I'm just trying to imagine somebody who is just somebody who is so far down in a gambling addiction that this is the only thing that gets them hard.
Honestly, like the stakes would be so much higher if it was Instagram posts. Like, yeah. I feel like liking an Instagram post carries way more weight than a Facebook
post. What am I going to do? Disappoint my parents more?
So for me, this is my plan. If I were a horrible person and someday got into a thing where like I was being canceled because I liked, you know, some white supremacist or something, mm-hmm. I'd definitely be like, nah, I was just playing Social Minefield and
you can only use that excuse once, is my understanding.
Probably true.
Yeah,
it sounds to me like this is apparently either someone experimenting with clickjacking or potentially trying to raise awareness of clickjacking.
Right. Okay. Huh. Yeah, there's a whole section. There's a whole header on the site for the clickjacking attack.
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to close this window because God no. But also that is a very funny idea. Sweet. Well, I think that's everything. I think that's all the stories. How does everybody feel about buttoning it up?
Let us button.
The credit.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 494. We're so happy you took the time. If you want to help us out, you can leave a rating or review. You can tell your friends about us. You can join the Duck Feet community group on Facebook and participate in the multiplayer. And if you want to, you can back the network on Patreon. You get a ton of stuff, way too much stuff at the $5 tier. Also, if you are in the Midwest, myself and Gary are going to be at the Midwest Gaming Classic in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. On April the 6th and 7th is what it is. So yeah, come on out and see us. We have a live show as of this current recording. It's going to be at noon on Saturday, which is a really good slot to have. So hooray.
Mm-hmm.
It should be a good time. That's pretty much what I got. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
I don't think so.
Okay. Sweet. Well, this has been The Level, and I've been Cole Ross. when we skip a week, it is hard to get back into it. But this has been The Level, and I have been Cole Ross. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I assert that this has not been The Level, and you can decide what to do with that. I'm Dennis Furia, and you can find me at Furia Games on Blue Sky.
I assert that it is impossible to know if this is The Level, and I may or may not have been Moxie.
And I don't know what The Level is anymore, and I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. All right. I only have one that I wrote down. I have Born to Drop.
That's pretty good.
What's that from?
Oh, that was from me asking you why you were dropping your Steam Deck so much.
Yeah, I was going to say, you weren't doing a bit. I thought you were like, what do you mean? No one's done that.
Okay, very good.
I had Rule of Curses.
Okay.
Rule of Curses. Ben, what you got?
I have Tertian, and I also have, you have to be as damaged as me to enjoy this.
Damaged. I'll be typing this until midnight, as me to enjoy this. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I've got five. One of them was Tertian, so put a tick next to that. I had Airbag Bud.
But
I had Boomer Spooker.
I like Boomer Spooker. Okay.
I had Master of Arcane Sliders.
Okay.
Struck me. And then finally, a Hot Fuzz Situation.
Okay. Hot Fuzz.
Although that one I think is lower priority for me.
No. So right now it seems to be between Boomer Spooker and Born to Drop, based on reaction. Is that fair?
Yeah. I like the idea that everyone's going to see Born to Drop and think it's about Helldivers.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
So that's where my vote is.
That's pretty good.
Okay, let's do Born to Drop. Ben, do you have an objection?
No objections.
Okay, it is decided.
One of these days, we're going to find Ben's trigger, and he's going to have a really strong objection.
Hold up.
Okay, now it's decided.